You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
Is there anything better than cracking open a cold beer and listening to your favorite podcasts? No, sir, and I'm here to tell you that the beer you should be cracking is one from our new sponsor, Circle Brewing, located in Austin, Texas at 2340 West Breaker Lane, Suite B. You can have a frosty one in their fabulous tap room where lots of seasonal specials await you, or you can get lots of their treats in the bottle or can at your local craft beer retailer. Try their award-winning Alibi Blonde or their diabolically rich Devil Knight Barrel Age Stout. They have so many solid choices, and they are the official sponsor of OneOfUs.net. Support Circle Brewing and support us, and we really need your support. There is no site without subscribers, and that depends on you. Please think about becoming a subscriber, because we cannot do this without you. The four different subscription tiers are there to give different flavors of bonus content, but we absolutely need your help, whether you sign up to give $2, $5, $10, or $25 a month. Don't be one of those people who loves something but won't lift a finger to keep it around. Help one of us and keep those podcasts coming. Yorgos Lanthimos, that's a name right there.
I know.
It's weird that like us art movie fiends are like, this is one of the most anticipated movies of the year because it's by director Yorgos Lanthimos, and most people are like, who?
No, but when you find someone that knows who he is, yeah. You're like, oh, brother. I mean, it's
the
like...
The guy who wrote and directed Dogtooth, The Lobster... The Killing of a Sacred Deer,
which, by the way, is still my favorite movie by him.
That's his signature piece for me.
But here we go with that point where he goes from being that crazy art film director who nonetheless gets huge actors in his films, mm-hmm. to doing a movie with huge actors in his films that actually is going to appeal to commercial audiences. And The Favorite, which I admit, I kind of have mixed feelings about that aspect of it. I'm like, I kind of was hoping for a full-blown Lanthimos period piece movie.
But this is the kind he would make.
I think so, yeah. I think the anachronistic stuff is the weird stuff.
There is that, but yet, unlike a lot of other period pieces, it feels like there's less anachronistic stuff than in a lot of
them. I think he manages, and to put it in a context, we were talking earlier tonight about Mary Stuart.
Mary Queen of Scots.
And I said that this was sort of like the deep impact Armageddon of this year's Oscar season. And I still stand by that. But to me, The Favorite is definitely the better of the two films. And part of that is because it manages to straddle that line between being a costume drama
and being anti-costume.
It wants to transcend that genre to the point of subverting it. And I think Mary Stuart, Queen of Scots, tried to do that.
Mary Queen of Scots.
Just Mary
Stuart.
There's
no Stuart. There's Mary Queen of Scots.
Because she was Mary Stuart.
Yeah. And the name of the film is Mary Queen of Scots.
Mary Stuart is actually a really famous British author.
It's Mary Stuart Masterson. I was thinking of Mary Stuart the play. I'm sorry. But the thing is, that movie is trying so hard to be edgy and modern. And yet Lanthimos manages to do that in a much more subtle way and actually makes it feel like it is more than just your everyday costume.
Well, let's talk about who's here. I'm Chris.
I'm Alan.
I'm Frank.
I'm Marco.
Yeah, this is one of my most anticipated films of this year. Not just because Lanthimos is in this, but because of the cast.
Yeah.
I mean, first off, like a lot of Americans don't really appreciate the degree to which Olivia Colman is one of the finest actresses alive right now.
Every movie is lucky to have her.
She has been in so many good things and great television shows as well. Like I can't be the only one hoping they do another season of Broadchurch.
Broadchurch is
really
good.
With her and David Tennant.
Yeah,
oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. She's so good in it. But she's also capable of amazing comedy. And this film really proves that she can do both at the same time.
Yeah.
This is a really funny film that is also... like makes you feel squirmy while it's being funny because it's wicked.
It's so wicked.
And then you have Emma Stone, who I think has unquestionably proven she's one of the most interesting young actresses.
Oh my God. I love her.
And Rachel Weisz, who can do no wrong.
Yeah, Rachel Weisz. Yeah.
I think Emma Stone in this, I really appreciate her as a physical comedian. in this film. I mean, she's required to do pratfall after pratfall, and just, you know, she's like, you know, slapped and punched, and she makes it all like work, and her timing is just impeccable in this
film. Well, I'm going to give it to Marco to tell the plot of this film because he's very quite briefly, good at this.
This deals with the Queen Anne. Again, these are historical people. Sarah, Lord of Marlborough, or Lady of Marlborough, is played by Rachel Weisz, and Abigail is her cousin, played by Emma Stone. What we realize is that Queen Anne is an older woman. She's very insecure. She is the most powerful person in England, but is deeply insecure, deeply unhappy. She's widowed. She's had 17 children, none of whom survive past a few years.
Jesus, 17,
and
she
was a broodmare, yeah. as many queens were in those days. And Sarah has become, over time, her favorite. A trusted advisor, but also someone who can tell her to her face when she's wrong.
Sarah played by Rachel Weisz.
Sarah played by Rachel Weisz. Now, into the picture comes Emma Stone as Abigail, who turns out to be a distant cousin of Rachel Weisz's character. She's fallen on hard times, and she's asking her distant cousin for a position. And before long, she realizes that using her own wiles, she can sort of seduce is not actually the wrong word. I was going to say it's the wrong word, but it's not.
It's right on multiple levels.
Manipulate.
She can manipulate and get a favor from the queen. And you basically have the most powerful woman in England with two other women who are trying to jockey into a position of power over one another. And it's a really fascinating love triangle, which may or may not have actually happened.
I mean, love is a strong word.
It's all very manipulative.
It is a love story.
But there's definitely, I think, something more to it than that.
It's a lustful, maybe loving, definitely power triangle.
Absolutely. And the thing is, this were women trying to seduce a powerful man, you'd go, oh, well, that's okay. I've seen that before. What makes this kind of interesting is that it is really a three-hander. You have these three powerful female characters all trying to kind of manipulate one another, but also at the same time having to make their way in a world that is still dominated by men. It is scabrously funny and just extremely witty, which is also one of the reasons why it is so different from everything Lanthimos has done. This is the first film that he is not credited as a writer on. If you know anything about Lanthimos, his dialogue is delivered in a very distinct way. It is very banal. It is very dry. And eventually, you sense that everybody is kind of suppressing their emotions. If you were just to look at it at first glance, you might think it was a fault of the performance or the screenwriting, but you realize that it's actually very intentional. However, in this movie, everybody gets to have that kind of Oscar Wilde sort of classic wit where everybody can say really horrible, terrible things, but it's all charming and funny.
He's not playing it for that sort of like that weird, like you're saying, that level where like this dialogue feels like there should be more emotion here and there's not, like, which is a
it's one of his trademarks.
It has more to do with like what he's really saying. Here he's doing like you said, a period piece. He wants to sell it to a wider audience, clearly. And he's got the benefit of great actresses delivering it that have a incredible chemistry with each other. Now, one of the major plot points you skipped over here is that the big issue is that England is at war with the French. Mm-hmm. And Queen Anne, Olivia Colman, sitting on the throne is like very, like, doesn't, she is very vulnerable. She's very sick. She doesn't really know what to do. And
she's on her own wavelength.
And it's clear that she's being deeply manipulated by Rachel Weisz's character, mm-hmm. who is like very much on the side of like, let's keep going to war with France.
Because her husband is basically the general in charge of this war.
Mm-hmm. And when Emma Stone comes in and she goes, her opportunity, which she's starting to see differing opinions in court, notably Nicholas Holt as Robert Harley, the first Earl of Oxford, who is, in terms of Democrats versus Republicans, Rachel Weisz is the Republican, like Nicholas Holt is the Democrat.
I'm not even so sure that's a great analogy because they're the rich landowners going, this war is great and all, but you are taxing the fuck out of us.
Yeah, but yeah. He's like, we need to sue for peace.
Yeah.
Nicholas Holt's position. And she's like, the only way I'm going to get in is like to like defend the other point. And is making deals, is also finding herself vulnerable as a woman as well, where Nicholas Holt is expecting more than just because she's a woman, than just like, oh, he's like, you'll do what I say. Yeah.
And then he pushes her into a ditch.
He immediately finds her someone who he could
again,
start to manipulate.
Pratfall. That's brilliant.
Yeah. Or tries to start to manipulate and like work his angle. And she clearly sees almost right away that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, she's a quick study.
She's very smart. It's like, I have my own agency. I'm going to use him to make him think he's using me to get myself in this position.
Don't you love what I love about this movie is that every character presents their own sort of definition of manipulation. In their own way, even Queen Anne.
Oh yeah,
you know she's
yeah.
like, oh, she's the ultimate
manipulator.
I have two puppets here. Oh my god, this is entertainment.
Yeah, she's not unaware of what's happening.
No,
she's more entertained by it than anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Else.
And I love how she becomes more lucid as the film goes on, and she more like in tune with what's happening around her.
And I love the way when it starts to build, because initially Emma Stone is very like, she's just like, keep your head down, just like I'm lucky to have what I have. But when she sees an opportunity, she goes for it. When it gets into
she's not a shrinking violet.
She's not. But when it gets to the second half of this film where she's like, oh, I see where I am now and I'm going to take full advantage of it, is when this film starts to fire on all cylinders.
But you know that she's also, I think she's the purest and innocent of the characters in the sense that, you know. Because her only motivation is survival. Whereas the other ones really are just sort of
But once we get her backstory,
coming from a position of loss and despair. Yeah.
You know,
the
Rachel
other ones are in a position of power.
Rachel Weisz is all for power. You know, Olivia Colman is really about who can I have sort of to adore me and love me. Emma Stone just wants to have a roof over her head. She really just wants. It's really about survival for her.
But she very quickly decides, oh, I need a husband. I need to curry favor with the queen. I need to do this. Yeah. I have to kind of cut out my scheming cousin.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is an act from her, because once we find some of her backstory, we realize she's not innocent. She has had some really tough experiences. We find out that her family was once very wealthy. Mm-hmm. Her father had basically squandered the estate. At one point, you know, she has had to do some unspeakable things in order to survive. And there's no moment more clear for me of that character when her suitor, who she ends up marrying, walks in and goes, you know, is trying to obviously use his advantage as a gentleman to kind of sway her into sleeping with him. And she's like, oh, okay, are you here to seduce me or to rape me? He's like, madam. I am a gentleman.
So, oh, to rape me. Yeah, okay.
You know, she's been through this before. Well, she knows how these people operate.
It's an interesting characterization because I think she's coming from a position where she is, her motives are more pure in the beginning.
Yeah.
But she's not naive by any means. So, like, she might have
her motives aren't pure, they're just immediate.
She has some moral grounding to stand on in the beginning, but she quickly becomes aware that, like,
but she
to survive, I need to usurp power.
Yeah.
And that is survival. And I'm not, like, fresh off the boat. I understand what's happening here. I'm not naive.
But she can't afford to be. If she wants to survive, she can't afford to be naive. And I think that she's her motives are not, like, as grand as Rachel Weisz's. Where Rachel Weisz just really is after control of everything. Where she just wants to have her place.
Mm-hmm.
Really. You know? Yeah.
Can I just say that right off the bat, one of the things that's most notable about this film is Lanthimos's direction, where he makes a very calculated choice to shoot everything in very wide shots.
Oh my god, how great was that?
Or in fisheye lenses.
Yes.
Which is an extremely odd choice with this, but it never goes to the point where you're like, what's going on with this movie?
The thing is, he's shooting in a real country estate. Mm-hmm. And these kind of lenses, because Yorgos Lanthimos is also very fond of using natural lighting, and wide lenses lend themselves to that. But he is able to, you know, shoot inside these real locations, and you will see the corner of the set, the ceiling, the floor, in deep focus. It isolates the characters. It makes them feel very small on this enormous stage. And yet he continues to do it even in the outdoor scenes when he really, strictly speaking, doesn't need to do so.
Mm-hmm.
It just lends this really disorienting modernist lens onto what is could have been a very dry, traditional
costume drama. It really could have.
It gives it a
surreal edge to it,
yeah.
doesn't it?
And it makes the movie, not only like the writing's really pithy and witty and it's fun to listen to and see the actual form, but it's like visually, the movie really moves. Like shot to shot, it's very beautiful or weird or strange. And it's just consistently, if the movie was on mute, you could watch it.
You would still enjoy it.
Yeah. You'd still be fascinated by it. Yeah.
Like, what is happening? Like every shot, everything is so composed. And, like, has a purpose, whether it be, like, for drama, for comedy, or for, like, specific character moments, or just for, like, look how gorgeous this is. Mm-hmm. Everything is just so perfectly, like, calculated.
And we're not talking about War of the Roses, where it's going, like back in, like, this revenge drama, you know? I mean,
there's a little revenge.
There's a little bit of
revenge, but it's, like, not all about that. It's, you're constantly questioning what these characters' actual, like, ultimate motivations are here.
I mean,
like,
there is some genuine love and some genuine hate.
And some genuine lust.
And lust and self-interest. Yeah. And if Mary, Queen of Scots, and...
Yay, got it! Yes!
If Mary, Queen of Scots, and the favorite prove anything... If you want to get a queen on your side, you got to go down on her.
Yeah.
That is the absolute
key. That's the low commonality.
That is the key.
The one thing those two films have in common. It's
cunnilingus to the rescue.
You need to be a cunning linguist.
A cunning linguist if you want to get ahead in this world. And all of these ladies manage like to manipulate and use one another, but... If it isn't obvious already, there is a very strong lesbian theme into this. Now, historically, these three women did exist.
Now, I was curious to know if that was an actual thing.
Yeah, I mean...
I think that is a conjecture. Sarah, the Rachel Weisz character, was very powerful, was very influential. She did eventually fall out of favor, and her cousin Abigail did end up becoming much closer to the queen, the favorite, as it were. Whether there was an actual lesbian connection. I mean, remember, all of these women were married or had been married to men.
It's conjecture.
It's pure conjecture. There is a lot of speculation
But none
here.
Of it in the history feels like this is unreasonable.
It never feels like it's...
It's never far-reaching in terms of what
And it
what
never
I
feels
do.
Like it's a big deal. Even Lanthimos says, I'm not making a big deal about it.
Yeah.
It's just like, this is a lonely woman who is up in her ears... You know, she is past the age of being married off. She can no longer have children. And yet she needs some kind of, you know, emotional and physical connection. And these ladies provide it.
The relationship between Sarah and the queen, like, it almost makes less sense if there weren't that connection.
No, very true.
Once it's revealed, it's like, of course. Like, you're just waiting for
you
that.
You feel like they're old. Yeah. Like, because they grew up
you
together.
Buy into that. You buy into that.
It really makes so much sense that they would be lovers as well.
And it's made clear they've known each other since childhood. Yeah. Abigail is the new one.
There's a deeply emotional moment in this film that I really treasure where it's like the queen collects rabbits.
Yeah.
And there's a moment where she is talking with Emma Stone's character, where she's like, well, they're all basically named after my children who died.
Yeah.
And these are my children.
It is
That's
very...
That's, like, really effective the way it punches you in the stomach and tells you so much about the queen right in that moment.
And what's incredible about this movie is there's that moment in there, and there's also a dance sequence where they are not dancing like they were to the times. It's very strange and modern. It almost looks like a Beastie Boys video.
It does.
And like, well, it really does.
And the dance scene is period. But the way he shoots it makes it look weird.
Yeah. And the fact that those two things exist in this movie, this deeply like devastating emotional moment, and this incredibly funny scenes. Like, I don't want to undersell, like, this movie is really funny.
Yeah,
it's very funny.
I was hunched over laughing during a lot of it.
Agreed.
And the fact that like something so devastatingly dramatic
don't
can
you
be
just
nailed
love that?
And
oh my gosh, so he's able to like do both the somberness
and
the hilarity.
Never like switches gears to do that. It's like pretty seamless throughout. Like the fact that it lives in both these worlds is incredible. Like it's such an incredible feat. I love it.
I think there's ultimately a price, as one of our characters will learn that, you know. She gets everything she wanted, but does she really? I mean, because this is a Lanthimos film, I can't tell you that there's going to be a happy ending,
but the ending does feel appropriate to
it
this
does.
Movie.
And I'm telling you guys right now, this is a film you're going to want to seek out and see because it is going to get a Best Picture nomination.
Oh, it has to. There's no question it's going to get
one. And I was actually, it's funny you said it's his most, because I agree it's his most accessible movie and definitely most mainstream. But still, period pieces don't exactly like light the box office on fire. No. So I think it'll probably be like still a relatively modest.
It's
like
of course it's going to be an art house success.
But if there's any movie of his thus far that's going to hit that level, it's definitely.
I'm calling it right now. I want Lanthimos to do in 2 years another remake of Suspiria.
Another one. Yeah.
It's funny because not the spoiler alert. My favorite movies, but this and Suspiria are probably my two favorite movies of the year. Those two movies, like. This movie especially, like, hit me so hard. Like, both of these movies have so much of what I love about movies in general, where they could be, like, incredibly beautifully shot, incredible performances, be very entertaining and, like, thoughtful and beautiful. It has just, like, so many elements. Both the movies have, like, so much of what I love about movies, like, in genre and movies.
And it creates its own world.
And genre can be prestige. Yeah. Like, The Favorite is not, like, deep genre, but it is, like... Very, it's a period piece, but it's also like fuck you period pieces.
But it also has those anachronisms.
Very, very fuck
like,
you period
piece. Somebody says, "Oh, you're going to be okay," and I'm pretty sure in the 17th century, that's not what people were saying. Or like the way Rachel Weisz shows up, we see that she's fond of shooting pigeons, and she's clearly coded as the much more masculine of the pair because she shows up. Wearing like a gentleman's jacket and trousers, which would have which was shocking in the 50s.
I mean, that was illegal. That was illegal during those days.
Never would have happened. And you realize, oh, Lanthimos is not trying to say, oh, this is exactly how life was back then. And again, why I go back to Mary, Queen of Scots, because
two in a row.
Because you can't try
even during the Mary Queen of Scots review. You're like,
we just want to talk about
the favorite. Not during the favorite review. It's like I want to talk about Mary Queen of Scots.
That movie tried so hard to be anachronistic and modern. It made such an effort to do that, even in its costuming. And Lanthimos does it. I've never thought of Lanthimos as a subtle director. But
and yet
he does
here,
this so subtly.
He does.
And he hits all the same points stylistically that other film is trying to do. And he's like, I don't have to go out of my way to make this work.
The biggest split is in Mary, Queen of Scots. It's like what they're trying to do is very earnest.
It's earnest.
They're reaching for something. They don't quite get it. And I really love the earnestness in it. This is like a master.
Yeah.
Doing that.
Yeah. Like, it's like, I don't have a question.
Lanthimos proves that he's capable of more than just his oddball cinema before this.
He could,
which I think is great, and I have no problem with
this. Could have been a work for hire, and it feels like a Lanthimos film.
He still manages to make it a Lanthimos film while not being off putting to people who aren't familiar with that, so don't like that sort of stuff. I think this is a major mark by a director who's been doing some incredible art film stuff. To going, I can do mainstream and make it much more interesting.
This is his Elephant Man. This is going this is from going from doing, you know, Eraserhead to Elephant Man.
Yeah.
It's still weird. It's still creepy. It's still non-commercial in many regards. And yet suddenly it's going to get some box office attention and some Oscar nominations.
Well, keep going to your final thoughts.
Well, I think I've made it clear that this is one of my favorite movies of the year. It was one of my most anticipated movies of the year. I think he manages to make what could be a very stodgy, very traditional type of costume melodrama, and yet it has a lot of teeth to it. This definitely deserves a rewatch, and I'm looking forward to the day I can rewatch it again. I give this 9.5 out of 10 things called a pineapple.
Frank?
You know, I love this movie, and I agree that the hallmark of a really great director is that, A, that he's able to craft his own world in every film he makes, and that every film he makes is different than his last. And, you know, he checks off both those boxes with this movie. It is wickedly funny. It's the humor. It's a very specific brand of humor, and oh my God, every laugh nails, every joke nails, every fall nails, but it's also deceptively poignant. And very touching, and it does become a love story. And you know, there's been a lot of debate about these three actresses, you know, being positioned for, you know, lead versus supporting. And I think when it comes to, and I that really annoys me.
I still say all three leads.
Period. See, it wasn't until like the film's third act when the love story really emerged. I thought it became more about the weight of the characters, where I thought Olivia Colman deserves to be the lead.
Yeah,
without question, and Emma Stone deserves to be supporting.
I don't agree.
I can't
imagine any of them being nominated.
Don't agree.
Not to interrupt, but if you look at the screener copy, for your consideration notice, it says Olivia Colman for Best Actress and Rachel Weisz and Emma Stone for Best Supporting.
No, there's a lot of, that's the way they're pressing it. But that also, having done politics. This for years. That's not always the way it ends.
No, and for years it's bugged me. It still bugs me.
A lot of that is political.
I just don't want them to cancel one another out because they all three deserve
And to be fair, like Emma Stone has more screen time in this movie than
that's always been my thing. It's like, no, let's look at the screen time. Let's look at the screen time. But no, it's about the weight of the character to this in relation to the story. And we look at it from that perspective. Olivia Colman is the film's greatest, strongest character.
She is.
But I felt she was the supporting actress because she was – because it was a story about the conflict between Emma Stone and
– It is. She's also, in this if you looked more at,
she's
than
the catalyst.
If you, see, if you look at – They're all three so important.
If you can't have that – you can't have this movie without, one, without
those,
one of them.
This is one of those movies why you say have a category for best ensemble cast.
Yes. Yeah, without question. I'm glad we have that now for AFCA.
And an ensemble of three.
But you think – well, I mean, yeah, we – Let's give a shout to Nicholas Hoult because he tries, but he gets swallowed. He gets swallowed out by
the. But he's great.
But he's great. He is great in this movie.
Kind of,
but
his purpose is to be swallowed.
Kind of. But I think the journey of Olivia Colman is probably the film's greatest. It's most magnetic aspect of this film, and I can see why she's been positioned as the lead. She is the lead in this film. Emma Stone is supporting because. When you get right down to it, the weight of her character isn't as vital as the other two. I'm sad that Rachel Weisz is not going to be positioned as the lead, and that is politics because those two women do really share this film.
Yeah,
really. But no, it's beautifully shot. The music is amazing in this movie. It is very much like a Wonderland sort of period piece.
I'm so glad you mentioned the music because. It is so noticeable.
Yeah,
constantly grabs your attention in a way that doesn't take away from the scene, that adds to it. It's like, wow, this score is great. Mm-hmm. Like, holy shit. Yeah.
I mean, a lot of classical pieces, but a lot of more modern avant-garde pieces, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But nothing that takes you out of it. Never,
no.
You know?
This is very accessible. At the same time, it's very, very specific. And it's everything, frankly, that you want in a period piece.
Yeah.
So there's nothing really to complain about.
If
this
it wasn't
for
Anna and the Apocalypse, this would have my best score.
Let's see which one will gets shortlisted, Chris.
Well, that moment when the queen and her two consorts, they sing and kill zombies, that was great. Who would have thought Lantimos
would have
that
made this even better?
That's his next movie. That's come all, on.
I'm sorry, I let
no,
it
yes.
And then Abraham Lincoln shows up and goes, I've done this before.
No, Tim Burton produced that movie already. Come on. No, this is going to be one of the year's best, and it deserves to be. It's wickedly funny. It's deceptively touching. There's nothing really to complain about this film. I'd give it 9 out of 10 almost crushed bunnies, which was
God damn it, Frank.
I know. That's a fetish, you know that?
Now I have to sit while
that
Alan
is a fetish.
I have to do Alan does his review and think about what I have to do.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah. No, but do you know that's a fetish, you guys? Like
crushing bunnies?
There's this fetish. I'm not kidding. This sexual fetish about very large women.
Specifically crushing bunnies.
Very large women wearing stiletto heels crushing little animals. That is that is classified as a sexual fetish.
Heard about that.
Have you heard about that?
Yes. That is probably Lanthimos' next film.
Yeah, totally, yeah.
That's the sequel to The Lobster, actually.
Alan, what do you think?
I fucking love this movie so much. I said it was one of my favorites. It's kind of a toss-up between this and Suspiria. I've kind of said everything I can possibly say about how much I love this movie. I want to reiterate that it is really funny. Really emotional, like beautifully performed, beautifully shot. We talked about the score. Everything about it is this. It's a movie that I can envision myself watching 2 to 3 times a year. Or at least
on. Like, really?
I'm a big rewatch guy. But I can see it, like, if I meet someone who hasn't seen it or a friend, it's like,
Let's throw it on. Mm-hmm. Like, or I'm doing something, like, something that also I think it can live as a background movie once you've seen it a couple times.
Sure.
Because there are sequences and it's beautiful. You throw it on while you're doing other stuff and you can look up and watch the scene between these, like, two or three actresses, like, playing it out. And it's just so much fun to watch for, like, 10 minutes. And then you could, like, go by thing and, like, watch this next segment. It's, like, works in all sorts of respects. Very rare for me. I'm going full on 10 out of 10.
Wow. Jesus. Okay.
Tragically named bunnies.
Ooh.
It's one of the rare, like, in my head, it's like perfect movies. Like,
yeah.
I can't find anything I dislike about it. Like, beginning to end, I was just in awe of it. I never felt that it was long. I never felt there was, like, this one moment. There's nothing in it that I found to be, it's like perfect to me. I love it.
Weirdly, I to me, to some degree, this movie was flawed because I love shamelessly weird films, and I love Lanthimos's film career, and I was kind of hoping this was going to be weirder than it actually was, and I realized that's on me. That's on me. I wanted this to go weirder, and it didn't. This is going to be less popular with Lanthimos fans than it will be with major audiences and critics.
Maybe.
I suspect
it's a gateway drug to Lanthimos.
It is, as you said, it's the Elephant Man.
Yeah,
you know,
it suddenly gets some respectability, and it doesn't have like a bizarre premise that you have to buy into. It's like, this feels like it could have happened.
But it is a film premise. As you're watching it. There's nothing about this movie that you don't go watching in the cinematography, going, I've never seen anything like this before, because you really have never seen anything like this before. It's subtle in that way. Mm-hmm. It's not like suddenly derivating off and doing animated sequences or something, but it's like, yeah, this use of fisheye lenses, weird wide angle shots where normally no one would ever
use
those things.
It's a Stanley Kubrick shot Barry Lyndon and ask the Beastie Boys for
it is. It absolutely is.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a lot of stuff,
yeah. It's a really fascinating movie to unpack on a technical level. It's a really enjoyable film on a character level. These actresses, specifically, are knocking it out of the fucking park.
This does character dynamics like no other movie this year, really.
It's literary dialogue.
It would be really hard to call for me personally which one I would say gives the best performance out of this film, but I'm going to still get points overall to Olivia Colman, who is giving a fearless performance here. The other two are still playing it in a way that where like they don't have to be ugly.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Olivia Colman is playing a role of a character who is falling apart.
Yeah. That's some tough places to go to where she has to go to.
She has to go to some really tough places and she nails it. It's a shame that she's not already a household name in America.
Mary
certainly is in Britain.
Mary, Queen of Scots, let's give an Oscar.
We still talking about Mary Queen?
let's give an Oscar to the actress who played Queen Elizabeth, because she still looks gorgeous, but she has some facial marks on her.
Like,
it's like, no, Olivia Colman just lets it hang out.
Yeah, lets it all hang out.
Gosh.
Nails it. Amazing performance. Would not be surprised at all if she does, in fact, get Best Actress this year.
Better.
As great as everyone is in this, wow, what a performance.
It really is.
She's horrifying.
The thing is, I can't think of any other performance, male or female, this year that would, like, that gets to this point.
Yeah.
It is so goddamn good.
And you guys are going to look at me funny, but the only competitor for me for best cinematography this year, other than Cold War, which we'll hopefully talk about soon, another Polish film, is Mission Impossible Fallout, because those shots were so impossible to get. They so broke new ground that no one had ever done anything like it before, and literally life and limb was risked to get them.
I'm
going to give them points for that right there. But that being said, this is really, you've never seen anything like that. It's beautifully shot. At its worst, it drags a bit at points.
I felt
this dragged a little bit, but it depends on who I'm talking to here.
Sure.
You know, there's a lot of people out there, if you're like, I mainly just watch Marvel films, and I'm not criticizing you for that. Hey, man, everybody do their own thing. This is not going to be your thing.
Or you could be one of those cool kids who likes this movie and likes Marvel.
Exactly.
You can like both. Yeah. And
Be one of us.
Oh, nice. Nice way to tie it in.
I think this is a wonderful film. I I'm more excited than anything to see what that happens next in Lanthimos's career because of this film. Because, wow, what are you going to do next, dude?
I was just talking to Marcus outside. We were hoping that, like, this might get him a little cachet where whatever he does next is going to be really fucking
weird. Well, the thing is, like, wow.
Everybody's going to go, hey, we have this conventional type of piece here, but we'd love you to come in and put your spin on it. He could go in either direction.
I admit that.
Either way, I'm ready.
I admit I'm more excited about him not going full weird so much as taking a commercial property that we all wish was better and doing something with it that makes it genius. You know, because he's capable of that.
Well, like an Amy Schumer rom-com or something.
Like
Yorgos Lanthimos' next Star Wars film.
I'm saying he should direct Blade.
Oh, right, okay. Hey.
The new Blade film for Marvel, I'm calling it.
Why don't you just give him a Disney, animated film to do live
I just
action.
Don't want him to be less wise when, goddammit. That's all I'm doing.
Literally anything he does, I'm there.
But yeah.
I think this is a thoroughly enjoyable film. It's one of the best movies of this year for people who like more arty stuff.
I give it
there you go, cinema.
9 out of 10 not really sexy cunnilingus scenes.
Well, that's how you do it, baby.